You are listening to a podcast from the New York Oracle User Group. The information given here is provided on an as-is basis. The presenters, as well as the officers and steering committee of the New York Oracle User Group, disclaim all warranties, express or implied, with regard to this information and will not be responsible for any loss or damage arising out of the use of any information contained in this presentation.
Thank you. So, my name is Michael New, as Samai, is that right?
Samai
said. I don't know any of you, but maybe we'll get to know each other in a while. I want to get started. While your blood sugar is somewhat high. I was talking to my friend, he's pretty funny. Asked him for his favorite joke, and he told me a joke which I think applies to grid control, actually. I'll start out with that. You know, when you go to a lot of these grid control sites, or if you're at a site where you're trying to get grid control to work or taking over a legacy system, a lot of times you just shake your head and, you know, wondering, oh my God, should I just start over? And the joke reminded me of that, because he said his doctor was telling a patient of his, that he some bad news. He had just a few months to live, and there, you know, that was the bad news. And the guy said, well, what's the good news? He said, well, the good news is that blonde over there, I have a date with her tomorrow. So the doctor being the consultant, and the patient being, you know, the poor guy or girl is trying to implement grid control. I see a parallel there, but anyway, I just wanted to tell a joke to start out with, so that's what I did. Anyway, let's take a look and see what we're going to cover. I'm going to play this by ear a little bit. I have a lot of slides, and you're going to be bowled over probably if I present them all. So if I skip through them, you know, I'd be happy to stop and say what it, you know, and go over a slide. But I may skip through some depending on our time. I'm trying to take this like into an hour. An hour is a long time to listen to somebody. And if you have questions, please ask the questions right, you know, when you think of them. Or they'll probably escape your mind like they do mine. So we're going to do sort of a introduction to grid control in the beginning here on installation. We'll cover the architecture of grid control briefly for those who aren't familiar with it. Can you just tell me, show of hands, who is not familiar with grid control, who has never used it, who's never installed it? Okay, good, because then some slides will actually be of use at the beginning. So most of you have used grid control, and I've installed the latest version, or 10.2 at least. Yeah, it might help. Thanks. I was once an actor, and I stood on a dark stage giving a monologue, not realizing there was no light for me. Just gave the whole monologue, you know. Not one light. I was totally out of it. So yeah, I'm a little oblivious to my surroundings. I think I see some people in front of me here, so I'll talk. But anyway, you want to leave the lights on?
Well, it seems like they're all off.
That's better, I think. Yeah, I can see you better. It's yeah. So we'll go over some architecture, basic architecture of grid control. And then we'll look at infrastructure design decisions and some high availability disaster recovery recommendations that kind of go hand in hand with that, with infrastructure design. And then we'll move into the main, this is really the crux of the talk. We're going to move quickly in the configuration because that's where the gotchas are. Notification rules, agent configuration, which is a broad topic. I kind of made it a broad topic. It's beyond what you might think. Metric tuning, which is a big one. As you know, you get all sorts of metrics firing. You need to tune them. And jobs and user-defined metrics, you familiar with those? And backup and recovery procedures for grid control itself. I'm not going to be going into target management, so it's more than beyond the typical monitoring of targets. Okay. So grid control architecture. The architecture is basically a three-tiered architecture, like it, unlike its predecessor 9i OEM, which was a client-server environment. You've got a so we're going to look at the infrastructure, briefly, look at the topology of, we're going to look at grid computing infrastructure, which is not grid control. We're going to look at grid control within the context of grid computing. Does anybody know what grid computing is? Like, I'm sure you've heard of it. Can you give me a... I want to hear someone else talk for a minute. It doesn't matter if you give the wrong answer. I just want to hear someone else beside my voice for just a second. Anyone know what grid computing is? Just give, take a shot. Yeah, I turned it on. I don't believe you, as Bob Dylan would say. I don't believe you. Somebody knows what grid computing is. Take a shot. Go ahead. You. Can you just speak up a little? Yeah. I heard you, but for everyone else. Right. Okay, so grid computing is gives you increased capacity. Yeah, we'll take a look at the architecture of it. But grid control fits nicely into grid computing. We'll look at the grid control itself, architecture, and then data flow between the grid control components, and the difference between grid control, database control, app server control. There's some confusion there, and this is a talk on grid control, so we want to just qualify that. That doesn't work. Okay. So the grid computing infrastructure is, this is a typical, you know, modern grid computing infrastructure. Does anybody have this at their work? Got ASM or some sort of shared storage? If you don't understand an acronym, just raise your hand. You know, I'm going to assume you know basic database stuff, but yes, sir. ASM?
We don't have ASM, but we have
GPU. Okay, right. So you've got some sort of shared, you know, automatic storage management or some third-party storage at the base of the architecture with rack, hopefully, or something, you know, active-passive cluster or something as our Tier 3, so that's the database and its storage. Tier 2 is the app server, which, you know, in our case, Oracle app server. And Tier 1 is the client, which is, you know, in our case, our PC. This is the grid computing infrastructure, and it happens to be grid controls infrastructure as well, right? The database, app server, which is the middle tier, and what's called the OMS, the Oracle Management Service, and the client, your browser. Okay? So, does anyone have any questions on this? This is kind of a, I'm kind of speeding by, but I'm going to leave you to look at these slides at your leisure. Here's a simple grid control topology that follows that infrastructure. We have, it's reversed. Here's the database up here. I should have put it down here. With what I call it Oracle Management Repository, OMR, okay, just to make it quicker. And the OMS, Oracle Management Service, is the middle tier for grid control. It's based on application server, 10G, 10.1.2, to be specific. And the agent, which is on a target host. This is, not quite grid computing, but your console is that third tier here, right? This is a kind of a fourth thing, which is the agent monitoring all your target servers. Does anybody not know what an agent is on grid control, in a grid control context? Okay, I'm just trying to get a feel for how far I have to go back. So the database communicates with the OMS via thin JDBC. It's just a, you know, so they can be on different servers. And then the OMS communicates with, takes communications from the grid control console and agents. Agents upload data to it, and console, you know, people, administrators, that is, log in through the OMS. Which computer am I on? This is getting a little hairy pretty quick, but I just want to give you a brief idea of I got to give you something that you don't know, right? Maybe. This is in the book, so you know you can look at it. But basically, you've got a lot of, I just wanted to show you, you know, that this isn't a complex product. So everyone's, you know, a guy told me, I was consulting with, he told me AppServer was not complex and it was easy to install, and he went to a one-week class and it was, you know, AppServer's easy, Oracle's easy, you know. He had never installed it in a real-time, you know, real environment. I said, anyone who says Oracle is easy doesn't really know Oracle, right? Because Oracle's never easy. But, you know, grid control has come a long way. So this is the architecture now where these components are communicating. If we want to just take a brief drive through here, we start out with, let's say, grid control console. You want to log in. So you go through either Webcache, which is part of the OMS, or you go through Oracle HTTP server. I should probably use this pen, right? But I don't want to look at a computer. And then the HTTP server communicates with its what they call OC4J, which is Oracle App Server Containers. That's the heart of the grid control application. It's an application that is launched through App Server. You know, it's kind of like a custom app would be. That's the brains of the operation, okay, of grid control. And then that basically allows you to authenticate and does so by logging in the repository database to get your authentication information, unless you're logging single sign-on. But and then it passes control back, and sure enough, it goes right back up through the layers to, you know, to the console, and you are now interacting. Now, agents also, where are my agents? I thought I had them here. Yeah. Here's a managed host, okay, target with a database and a host. And the agent is also communicating with the OMS directly through the HTTP server. It bypasses Webcache. You don't need Webcache to run grid control. You can turn it off if you want. It's hard to secure, and I have a whole I can give you some information on how to secure Webcache if you ever want it. No one will ever tell you how to do that, by the way. It took me many months to try and figure out how to do that. But you can just turn off Webcache if you don't need it. Webcache is used for caching pages, and most pages of grid control are, what percentage of pages of grid control are dynamically generated? Does anybody know? Take a guess. In other words, how useful will Webcache be to grid control? It's like 97 to 99% withdrawn. Pretty much the logo, you know, the stuff that doesn't move, like the tabs, that stays. But the rest of it's refreshed anyway, so you're not really going to be using Webcache. And who has ever seen a Webcache alert when they first, you know, install grid control? Anybody get those Webcache hit requests, percent of hit requests, I think it is, firing off right away, saying it's less than 20%? You're going to get it. Just turn it off. Turn off that alert altogether. So you can go out. You can bypass Webcache. The agent logs into the HTTP server and communicates via HTTP or HTTPS, S by default. And can't even see it. Sorry, I have to step back myself. After returning. Uploading data to the OMS. The OMS then communicates via the brains to the repository and uploads the data from the agents. You know, managed data, alerts, metrics, alerts. It uploads all those things to the repository, and that is the store of all the information for your managed environment. And back up. Down to the agent. Also, it communicates to the agent to control your environment.
Why do we have 7C for grid control?
Okay, yeah, that is a SQLNet traffic only direct connection between OC4J, the OMS, and a managed target. It doesn't go through the agent. It goes right to the target through SQLNet. So to manage databases, to manage basically connect to a database. So when you go in to like a database homepage and performance or whatever, that's how it's connecting. It doesn't need to go through the agent there, right? It's a SQL.
Why do you need
Right, DB control. Well, no, this isn't DB control. We're going to go the difference between those in a minute.
But then in grid control, why does it need to connect directly to the database?
Well, to manage it. Like if you're logging via DB SNMP, which is the default monitor user.
Manage means shut down.
To shut down, start, to look at performance, real time, right? Performance page, to administer, to add table spaces, et cetera, right? Right.
So that
The last thing you said, you may have a database and an OMS server as well? Is that what you said?
That's the purpose you install an agent?
Yeah, the agent is chain installed. That's what you're calling a tag along or chain installed agent with the OMS. And its purpose is just like any other agent. Right, it's going to monitor whatever the environment is. In this case, it's going to monitor the OMS. There's actually intercommunication there. There's another agent called the App Server Control Agent. I don't want to confuse you, but the agent you're talking about is a chain installed agent which monitors the OMS and any other targets on that OMS. Hopefully it's the only target because the OMS should be dedicated.
Monitor.
Yeah, and manage. Yeah, just like any other agent. It's identical once installed to a standalone install. Good question. You're vying for that book. You're vying for it. I have to wait till the end, right, to know who all the questions. So ask a good question. You had a good one, too, so I don't know. All right. We're going to have to blow through this a little bit more. Don't get confused by this. There's a lot of extraneous information. But basically, the difference between grid control, database control, and app server control. Anyone want to take a stab at it? I tire of hearing myself talk. Anyone want to take a stab at what the difference is between them? I'll give you a book, too, if you give me a good answer, not just a good question. Okay, well, what's app server control, then?
Database control only one database called workload that
controls
multiple databases. All databases that, all the targets that have the agent
support. Excellent.
I assume application control, this has something to do with the application too.
Yeah, exactly. It monitors and administers the application servers. And here's the agent for an app server, right? This app server control agent is installed with Oracle application server, and it is installed with grid control too. There is an app server agent installed when you install the OMS. You just don't, if you look under the OMS home/bin, there's an EMCTL executable there, as well as an agent home/bin, EMCTL. They're different. And you can get in a lot of trouble when you confuse them. But there used to be a problem with grid control where it had problems keeping synchronized. So you thought targets were up, but they were showing down. And it had something to do with app server control not being synchronized with the grid. But that's no longer a problem. Anyway, app server control controls and administers app server. Database control, where's my database control? There. Administers one database. Okay. Can you run database control and grid control concomitantly or concurrently?
Yes.
Yeah. Do you want to?
But there's no need to.
Right. I would shut it down.
If the grid is down, then or the agent is down, then you have to directly go to database control to see what's going on.
Why would you ever go to database control if the agent's down? Why would
sometimes grid, for example, in our case, one time the grid itself was down.
Okay, if you have a back door to the database. Okay, fair enough. But I would shut it down. You shut down database control with the EMCTL stop DB console. It goes away, and you can even rename the executable so it doesn't start, right? But grid control, as you said, what's your name?
Irina.
Irina manages everything, right? It manages. Where's my grid control console? Here it is. Goes through an OMS, and now the OMS can monitor all these targets, right? So that's the common link to all these targets, is grid control goes through the OMS. I'm calling it the Oracle Management Service. It can be multiple OMS hosts, okay, which are servers or hosts, whatever. But here we're showing dedicated agents pointing to one, you know, certain OMS, and here another certain OMS. But you can also use a load balancer to virtualize that connection so that all agents report to all OMSs, conceivably. Okay, so that's the difference. We're going. The book is about grid control, though I go into app server control a little bit and database control, and there's a lot of overlap, obviously. There's three different groups within Oracle, though. Even database control group is different than grid control group. Never the twain shall meet. All right. Infrastructure design. This is the big constraint in infrastructure design. Network latency and bandwidth. Anybody know what the slowest link here is? What the bottleneck usually is with topographically, geographically designing your grid control environment to cover your entire infrastructure? You know, let's say you're a worldwide company with offices all over the place. Can you have a single global instance, as Oracle likes to call it, within the e-business suite world? Can you do that? One global single instance for the whole world of grid control? You have to have a really fast network, right? You can, and there are a few of those sites, particularly in Europe. But what's the slowest link? Where does anybody see it? Where's the got you? Here. Is it agent to OMS or OMS to repository that you really... agent to OMS, 300 milliseconds. OMS to repository, 30 milliseconds. That's a lot faster. So OMS to repository actually is, speed-wise is where... Or bandwidth-wise, latency-wise, is where you're going to maybe have a problem keeping up, right? Agents, 300 milliseconds, that's a long time. But East Coast to West Coast, you know, as the speed of light, if you can, you know, calculate it out, you're going to have half a millisecond to, you know, or more delay, just the speed of light going back across the country. So you have problems managing your environment with one global single instance. But how do you get around that? Well, put OMSs on either side of your repository. Let's say put your repository in the middle of the country, an OMS here, an OMS there, and then have agents report to your OMSs more geographically located to the OMS. Have the closest agent to that OMS report to it. Same over here, have an agent reporting to this OMS. And then you're linking up. Then the OMS is on both sides here, linking to a repository, you're spanning your OMSs that way, right? Most people install OMSs in the same server room as a repository. But if you're looking for global single instance, so to speak, I would consider putting an OMS outside of your server room, your main production server room, and then put another one on the other side, geographically speaking, from the repository. Does that make sense? That's a trick that most people don't know, and you can get a lot of consulting business or, you know, from being able to solve that little dilemma. I know that the FAA has 30 grid control sites. Now, partly that's because they're paranoid and they need to be autonomous within each of their regions. But 30 sites for just the FAA, federal, that just means U.S., right? 30 sites? Come on now. I can't wait to get in there. Oracle's actually a customer of Oracle, and I'm consulting with them on it. But they can consolidate, right, with that little trick I just told you. So that's a good one. But this is a problem with the OMS to repository. You're going to get backlog of notifications and that kind of thing if you don't mind your network speed. What else? The repository, 1 gigabit per second is the speed, the bandwidth you need between repository and OMS, and 300 kilobits per second for agents. So that's pretty relaxed for the agent to the OMS. Okay. I can see now I'm going to run out of time, so I'm going to start deciding what I want to show you or not. This is the idea of environments versus regional sites. Environments, you know, your entire grid control environment. It might be composed of more than, like in FAA's case, 30 sites, right? So you have to decide, when you're designing the infrastructure, how many environments and how many sites, right? Is each environment is separate, totally logically separate from the others. So OMSs don't know about each other unless they're connected to the same repository. Make sense? Okay. So do you want to have, who's running grid control at their company right now? Okay, who's running with production one environment running and monitoring production and non-production targets?
We have one environment that has ever been tested out.
And who's running it where you have a production environment monitoring production targets and a non-production environment monitoring non-production targets? Anybody running that? No. That's where you, grid control is sort of the orphan stepchild, right? You know, they usually don't have a test instance of grid control unless you're in a medium to large environment. How big is medium? More than 1,000 targets, let's say. So I don't have a problem with this, except you might when one of your non-production targets all of a sudden has a synchronous file the agent has to upload, synchronous meaning in order in relation to others, and all of a sudden it's not uploading for some reason. Now all your non-production environment is impacting your production environment. So best practices, you know, Oracle Consulting will tell you to separate them. Nobody does, but you know, there are advantages to both.
Right.
Okay. A grid control should. Yeah. Right, everything on that host, yeah, if there's a production, but if that host shares production and non-production targets, then you're going to have a problem with the production targets on that host for that agent, right? But you're right, that agent, you can shut it down, other agents will still upload, you know, oblivious to that agent's problem. But you're only going to have, generally, when you have production and non-production, a lot of people are sharing, you know, production and non-production targets on a certain host, you know. Bad instance management strategy, but that's what they do. So they share grid controllers. If you do that, there's no reason to separate grid controls into production and non-production, right? Otherwise, you'd have to run two agents on one box. Can you do that? Yes. Why would you want to? It's just over additional resources and overhead, and it's not really supported. So most people run one environment. Active OMS. Is anyone running active-passive OMS? Like with a cluster, a third-party clusterware? Okay, good. I don't know why you would do that. I'm pretty adamant about that. You know, there's sites, there are legacy sites, particularly in the financial industry here in New York where I've been to, that they use, you know, whatever their clusterware is, you know, whether it's HACMP or, you know, Veritas or whatever. And they're committed to Veritas at the OS level, let's say. And you may have to be, you know, compliant with that and install grid control in an active-passive environment for that reason. Otherwise, I would stay active-active. There's no reason not to scale your grid control environment and let one of these boxes, OMSs, sit dormant, right? So active-active is a good design decision. How do you get two bangs for your buck, whatever the word, expression is? You can put one of the OMSs at the DR site, and now you've got a DR solution as well as a high availability solution, right? The OMS is active at the DR site. And then it's also a DR, you know, OMS, because it's by virtue of the fact that it's sitting at the DR site, right? That's a no-brainer. That's how you should probably do it. Most companies, I don't know why they don't do that, but that's, you know. To put an OMS, you can put also a standby OMS at the DR site. We'll talk about that later, but that would be a separate OMS, a third OMS, in case you don't want to have to reconfigure your active-active OMS to point to a DataGuard repository, let's say, at the standby site, right? Because right now, both OMSs, you know, up here, OMSs are going to be pointing to the same repository. But if that goes to DR, and your data guard has to, you know, you have to have a data guard standby database, then both OMSs are pointing to, even at the DR site here, it's pointing to the production. You'd have to repoint it to the DR site. So some people like to have a standby OMS that's ready to go down, but pointing to the DR site, to the basically to the standby database at the DR site. That would be, you know, even better to have a third OMS waiting. And we'll go over that. Okay. I already explained this. Geographical coverage. By stringing out OMSs, you can increase your geographical coverage, right? DB11G, anybody running DB11G for the repository? You're a brave man. Is it working?
A lot of issues.
Yeah, I wouldn't run DB11G until you have EM11G. When are you going to get that? Probably not until WebLogic replaces AS10G, because that's what's delaying grid control 11G release now. I don't know if you know that, but that's Larry Ellison bought WebLogic to replace AppServer, and by God, they're going to wait until, you know, the grid control group is going to wait until AppServer is replaced by WebLogic, then WebLogic will be the OMS tier. That's the inside scoop, supposedly. I don't work for Oracle anymore, but I have a lot of people that, you know, friends still there, and that's what they tell me. So, I wouldn't be holding my breath for 11G at grid control. I wouldn't be running 11G database with it. There are a lot of install issues. Okay. That's a little small print, but the agent. A lot of decisions to make when you're installing an agent, some of which you may not be aware of. You know, most people, all they know about the agent is, oh, I can, there's six methods, maybe. They may know three or four of them. But there's more decisions you can make to simplify your life. Agents where management of grid control is most of your time is going to be spent with agents. Because, you know, it makes sense. You only have one repository, logically, maybe a couple of rack databases, but a couple of OMSs, but then you got tons of agents. So that's, you really want to try and manage your agents by selecting the right agent install method. Hopefully just one, so you only have a learning curve of one. And hopefully it's the agent deploy method so that you can push it out and upgrade all at the same time in one operation. Agent deploy is really the only mass deploy method, in my opinion, because that's the only one that you can do in one operation, multiple agents per platform. So if you're some Windows boxes you got to manage, some Unix boxes, well, you'd have to have two different installs there, one of the Windows boxes, one of the Unix boxes. But that's not so bad, right? What other decisions? So agent deploy is the only one that pushes agents from the OMS. I would consider it for sites greater than with more than 10 hosts. There's a setup process. I have a whole chapter on just agent deploy, and then the other chapter on agents, there's three chapters. One is just basic agent configuration. One is just on agent deploy, and then the other one is on all five other methods. So that's how much more complicated agent deploy is, about five times more, I would say, just from the coverage I had. So, you know, you may not want to do it if you got five hosts you're managing, you know. It's a pain to set up sometimes, especially for Windows. I wouldn't even recommend it, really, for Windows. It's pretty buggy, and you have to install the Cygwin suite. Does anybody know what that is, Cygwin suite? It's basically Unix for Windows, okay? And it's required because good old, you know, Oracle is, that's where they write their code for Unix. So it has to pretty much emulate Unix for a Windows box to use agent deploy. Do you want to use an existing user or a separate agent user? I mean OS user. Anybody using a separate user like agent called agent 10G or whatever you want to call it? Or is everyone just using Oracle as their user to share the same user as the target owners? Is that what everyone's doing? Most people do that. But you may want to think about using a separate agent user if, for example, you're using an LDAP agent. Anybody ever heard of that, running an LDAP agent? You know what local directory access protocol I think it is? You can run one. That was the first thing I did at the first site I ever installed grid control. I had to run an LDAP agent. It was like a, you know, company requirement. You can do it. And it's just in the book. You can read about it. But so that's a decision you may not know about. But that's nice, right? That's one user you install, one LDAP user, and then all your boxes can run that off of that user. And that's a particularly attractive to those sites that need to have separate users for each software product. Some sites are like that. You can't share Oracle with all the products. You have to log on as a different user for each product. What about a cluster agent versus a local one? Can you install a local agent? A local standalone agent on to monitor a rack node? Does anybody know that? You can't. Can you also install a rack agent, what they call a cluster agent? It's not like can you do that? Of course, right? So, which would you prefer to use? Cluster agent, because it's more aware of the rack environment. Though they can both monitor rack databases, a cluster agent, it's a bad term for it, really. It's not like a rack database. It's not like where these agents are intercommunicating with some, IPC protocol, and they've got a private network. They don't. They just know about each other, and you can patch and install them across using the SSH that you've got set up for your rack database. That's useful, right? You only have to install a rack cluster agent on one node, and it pushes it to the other one. It's like rack installs, right? Database installs. So that's a step. That's a decision you need to make. And then I would install the cluster agent. And then configuring a server load balancer first to avoid agent reconfiguration. Has anybody had to do that? Is anybody running an SLB, like an F5 or something? Right. It's not hard to reconfigure an agent for an SLB if you don't want to install the agent through the SLB to begin with. But it's a lot easier if you're going to do it anyway. Configure your F5, get your network administrator to do it, or in my case, most of the time, I have to do it myself because they don't know how, or I got to convince them to buy the F5. But there's pretty good notes out there on how to configure the SLB, the server load balancer, for agents. Do it in advance, and then when you install the agent, you point to a virtual server name, on the server load balancer that's representing all the OMSs that you have, instead of pointing to one OMS or another. Okay, so that's a good decision to make up front. If you're going to do it, might as well just do it right up front. Which means get a lot of lead time on your, get first day you're on the job with grid control, talk to your network administrator and start telling them what you need. I need to change my host name, make it fully qualified. I need the SLB set up. I need the networks, I need firewalls opened. Your network administrator should be your first contact when you're installing grid control because you're going to be waiting for them. I guarantee. And then the LDAP I just mentioned. You can use LDAP with an agent, a deploy method, and with a cluster. You can use an LDAP agent user, but you can't use it with agent deploy or a cluster agent. That's the only downside, but I don't know why you'd want to. Okay, how are we doing on time? I know we're not doing well. Well, we'll take a break if I'm going to do that. But do you guys want to take a break now, or do you want to wait a little while till we get into configuration?
No.
You can wait till we get to configuration. All right. So requirements for agent install, for grid control installation. There's a bunch of them, and I don't really want to go through this very detailed, but they're in the book, and they're also in the grid control documentation set. But I give you the highlights here. Network administrator, ask him right up front for stuff. Open all the ports between components. Fully qualify all your host names. The host name, the first alias in the etc host file, and the DNS lookup should all return fully qualified names. Or if you're not, at some Unix site that doesn't use fully qualified names for some reason, then they should all return non-fully qualified. But they should be all this either returning fully or non-fully for all three methods. The host names themselves, when you type host name, it should return it, right? And the aliases. You're going to run into trouble otherwise. in one way or another, you most likely, with fully qualified names. Hardware, right up front, look at fault-tolerant storage at a minimum for your database files, obviously ASM, right? For the OMS sysman receive directory or shared receive directory, which we'll go over later, where the OMS shares all of its, like an NFS drive is used to share all uploads to OMSs, and they share that drive. So the NFS drive would be generally is a mirrored drive. And also mirror your agent home sysman EMD directory. That's the only one that has stateful information in it. The rest of it can be reinstalled if need be. You can reinstall your agent, but it's easier to build that stuff up front. Just install on fault-tolerant storage, at least preferably your whole OMS home and all your entire agent home, but at a minimum those directories within them. Okay, questions on that? We'll go into that later when backup recovery, if we ever get there. Backup recovery, you know, what changes? You got to decide what changes, and so we'll look at those are the directories that change, that have files that change. So put them on fault-tolerant storage. Software, does anybody run a separate inventory for each product, Oracle inventory, you know, and manage it manually by, you know, doing renaming and that kind of thing? Or is everyone using central inventory? Who's using separate inventory for different Oracle products at managed sites? Not grid control per se. Anybody? So you know what I'm talking about? Central inventory for Oracle products? VarOpt Oracle Orients points to a inventory location. Is anybody using separate inventory? Okay. Well, I'm going to blow by that's the next screenshot, I think. But you want to use central inventory if you can. Just back it up every time you do something to it. Make your parent directory consistent across hosts. You know, like EO1 App Oracle Product EM10G Agent10G, right? EM10G Agent10G. Well, alongside Agent10G on an OMS host will be OMS10G, and on the repository will be DB10G, right? So make the agent home the same name across all your hosts. You know, use EM10G even when you don't have anything but an agent. So you don't have to remember what your home is. It's always the same path across all your hosts. These are little things that, you know, help. Don't use any symbolic links for any of your specifications for agent homes or anything. They don't work within grid control. You can't install on a symbolic link. Sync all your OSs so you don't go crazy looking at log files and comparing them with different timestamps. Run NTP, which is the time server, to sync them on all your hosts, especially rack nodes. That's just a typical good best practice for rack. But use the same ports for all OMS hosts. Has anyone used static ports feature when they installed grid control? Okay, it's similar to app server control. You point to a list of file called staticports.ini. It has all the ports numbered. You get it from the first OMS, and you use it for all the other ones. What happens if you don't use staticports.ini, and you're installing on an OMS, a second OMS, entirely separate from the first? Will it use the same ports for everything?
Not necessarily.
It won't, period, no. So now you got different ports. I hate that. I'm a perfectionist. I don't dress like one, but I am. And look at that. And that bothers me. So you got to use static ports for the second and subsequent OMS installs if you want to have your ports the same. Okay. Most people don't realize that until they install their second OMS. And they go, why did it use 4890 and not 4889? Which is my upload port for the agents and for console logins. Why 4890? Oh my God! Now I got to go in and change it because I'm that kind of personality. I got to go change it. All right. So, the prereq checker. Does anybody use that prereq checker in standalone mode? It's basically what comes with the installer that does the prereq checks when you run the full blown installation. But you can run it by itself. You can run it right off the bat, see what, you know, what you're missing, or you could run it in my opinion, it's best to run at the end, just to double check you've got everything ready. And it doesn't check every single prereq, but it does check most of them. Here's the inventory thing I was telling you about. I'm not going to go over this unless you have you want me to, but this is how you manage inventories if they're separate. Okay, last part of the install, and maybe we'll take a little break. HA and DR recommendations. There's the HA, time is money. There's the DR. That was my old PC before I bought a Mac. Okay, active-active. An active-active architecture. Is anybody running this grid control site? Your grid control site? Active-active, you are, right? Okay, server load balancer, rack database, couple of OMSs in active mode, and management agents and consoles, logins reporting all through the load balancer to virtualize the OMSs. Anyone else running that? Shame on you. Yeah. Okay, active-active. Thank you. I'm sorry. You may get it just for being, for asking a question that you may get the book just for that. Just for, all right, so an active-active is just the OMS is active. It is uploading, receiving uploads from agents and also serving console users, right? So the console user logs in through the server load balancer or directly to, you don't have to have a server load balancer to be active-active. You can log in directly to an OMS, you know, by using the host name as part of the URL. Or to the other one. They're live. They're running. They're working. Or agents are uploading through the load balancer or directly to these OMSs. An active passive would be one of the OMSs is down. It's not being used. It's what ready for standby, you know, operations, usually within a cluster of third-party management system, you know, like Veritas. So that's agents to multiple OMSs using the server load balancer. That's the best way. OMSs to multiple rack nodes, right? So you don't have any single point of failure, right? And then the repository is racked with ASM, so you're covered. The only thing that could go wrong is one of your agents goes down. You have a backup of that, or you just reinstall. No big deal. I'll show you how to resync your agents with your environment if you have to restart from scratch. That's the best architecture, right? That sure looks like grid computing to me. So grid control plugs right into grid computing architecture and monitors it at the same time. It monitors itself. There's no chicken and egg situation there. Grid control monitors itself and the grid computing environment. We'll go over that. But HA recommendations, high availability, right? Multiple active-active OMSs. Locate them appropriately, remember, for network latency between OMS and repository. Install them on fault-tolerant storage. Shared file system loader, we'll go over that. But is anyone using shared file system loader? Can explain it? No one? Okay, that's doesn't make sense. If you're running server load balancer, you've got to be running a... Okay, well, each agent uploads to a OMS or to a group of OMSs, right? If you're going through a server load balancer, then you're going to be going through to a group of OMSs. And the share receive directory is just a place, instead of OMS/sysman receive on each box, OMS box, local storage, instead of that, you're going to upload to an NFS drive that all OMSs have access to, and then therefore, one OMS can upload another's agents, an agent uploads to this OMS goes down. Well, it's in all the agent data is sitting in a shared receive directory, an NFS drive. Well, that OMS can now upload the data from that OMS first processed can upload it to the repository. Does that make sense? I didn't say that very well. Does anybody not understand that? Okay, so shared receive directory is crucial. It's easy to install to do. You configure it in a minute, one command, bounce your OMS, and you're. You just have to have NFS storage, right? So shared receive directory is definitely the way to go.
Why NFS storage? Why not using GPFS? That is also shared.
Well, you GPFS, if you're using active passive, or if he's using
active-active, right? Or GPFS?
That's for...
Shared storage.
You can use... Yeah, it doesn't have to be NFS. It can be any kind of shared storage. I'm not real familiar with GPFS, but I thought that was an active standby kind of environment. Isn't it?
Layer latest data is on first awareness, how you are managing. It's supposed to be shared whenever you upload something to awareness. It should be copied over to all awareness at the same time.
Well, you copy, put it in one location that all most of us have access to, a network drive, right? And that's the one location. You don't have to. You could also just have separate OMSs with separate local directories that the each agent that that uploads to that OMS will use. But that's a single point of failure, right? For the that data, if the OMS goes down. All right. Set up the shared file system loader. That's the same thing as a shared receive directory. Configure the connection string to a rack repository. A lot of people have rack repositories, and then they don't realize they're not using the rack repository. It's not being only one node is active for the OMS to upload to, because you have to reconfigure the string a lot of times that the OMS has for this thin JDBC connection to the rack database. So you have to, there's a, you know, it's in the book, whatever, you can just basically change, it's sort of like a, it's just a typical SQLNet, you know, you just add load balance equals yes, failover is yes, and both nodes in that alias, and you're all set. That's in, configure the OMS startup on boot. Does that happen automatically out of the box? Some OSs it does, some it doesn't. I have a whole appendix on how you can get it to work, and there's bugs on having to edit the system-supplied scripts that Grid Control puts in your RC directories. So it doesn't automatically work. You got to sometimes configure it. So don't assume that it works. Windows, it actually works better. That's the only thing. The only time Windows works better. Okay. Wrong computer. Okay. The database, OMR database, high availability, pretty much been in through this. You can install a repository in an active, passive environment if you want. That's all I'm going to say about that. best to use a rack database, but those are two choices. You can patch to the latest certified database version. A lot of people are running 10.104 database because that's what comes with Grid Control. Why? You know, you got all these things you got to do extra when you do that. Partitioning doesn't work right off the bat, partitioning pruning. You may as well upgrade to 10.201 and then right up to 10.204 or wherever the latest 10.2 is of the database. You're really going to save yourself a lot of trouble. You'll be hitting bugs, database bugs that relate to Grid Control otherwise. Select ASM as your storage technology. These are all OMR database HA recommendations, right? ASM. Abide by MAA best practice. What's MAA? Maximum availability architecture, right? That's part and parcel of Grid Control, a good Grid Control architecture. Configure automatic OMR database startup on boot. Same thing. All components have to be configured, or maybe need to be configured to start up when you restart your server. They may not automatically work. The agent HA recommendations, use a server load balancer. If you are running active passive environments, you need to install an agent on active passive servers so that you can, if you do switch over to your passive server, you know, if you do a switch over, you got to have agents monitoring your new production servers, right? So it's really dictated by whether you use those for your managed targets. Install the agent on fault-tolerant storage, I mentioned. Provide redundant notification method. What's that mean? Anybody? When you get emails from Grid Control, right? Usually you have one server, an SMTP server you enter on install. You enter the name of it, or you can configure it later in the console. Why not put two in there? I'm sure most of you guys are running big environments with more than one server that is either clustered itself, so you only need to put one server in it, but it really is high availability server. It's just logically, you know, one name, so you don't have to worry about it. Or if it's just one SMTP server and you have another one that's a backup, put that one in there too, just in case the first one goes down, the second one will upload your, will send you an email, okay? And test your agent, restart on failure. That usually doesn't work on Unix. And verify that, I'm sorry, I meant to say startup on boot. This is automatic. If you kill your agent, you know, kill the process, VM agent, it'll restart usually. Well, the watchdog, there's a watchdog process that starts the agent. That usually works pretty well, but you should test it. Okay. We're almost done with the install, and then we'll take a break. Grid control DR. This gets a little more complicated, but this is right out of MAA white paper for grid control. Grid control has MAA as well. Right? There's database max availability architecture, there's app server, and then there's grid control max availability architecture. This comes right from a white paper Oracle did on DR for grid control. So here you've got an active site, standby site, a couple of OMSs, your primary site with rack and SLB, all the works. And then here you've got a shared loader directory here where basically you're replicating all of the agent files that were uploaded to the OMS, hopefully on a shared network drive. You're replicating them using some replication form, SRDF or RSync or something, RDIST, to a standby site so that if you have to switch over, all agent data will be right there, right? That's high availability and DR. And then you have a standby OMS, at least one, maybe two, hopefully standby rack repository or just one single instance repository, and you got agents on the standby boxes ready to go. Maybe they're down, but they're ready to go. You're running a DataGuard observer with fast start failover. Does anybody know what that is? What is it? Right. The observer basically is usually on a separate box, and it says, oh, my primary is down, my primary database or repository database is down. I'm going to switch over to the standby. Anybody running that? Me neither. I don't trust it. You know? When's the last time, something went down by accident? Oh, yesterday. No, I wouldn't run it. But I put it here because it's recommended. But I'm just telling you, between you and me and the fence post, I wouldn't run it. The broker I'd run, because the broker gives you GUI control through grid control of your data guard environment, whether it's a monitored database or grid control's repository itself, right? So run your data guard broker, DG broker equals true or whatever it is. It's an init parameter. Redundant OMSs, replicate your shared receive directory. This automates failover. We'll go over that maybe later if you're interested. But there's a way to automate the failover of the OMS. That's not bad. Like if you start your standby database for your repository, chances are you meant to start it, and chances are then you want that OMS to start right away at the standby site, right? There's a way to trigger that with a database trigger. Say, go ahead, OMS, start up. I'm ready to take over at the standby site, right? That's kind of a nice feature to implement. I have it in the book, and I think in the book. Trigger standby OMS startup from the standby OMR startup. That's what I was talking about. And actually, this is even goes a little further. This actually switches over to the standby OMS automatically when the primary OMS goes down. I wouldn't even do that. For the same reason, I wouldn't switch to a standby database using DataGuard Observer. Sorry, I got that backwards. Okay, I think almost there.
What do I lose if I lose the repository?
What happens?
Yeah,
you're gone.
Grid
control's down. No, if you lose your repository.
The application, the business, does it get affected? No.
Only the fact that if it's your only monitoring, your production monitoring is down. I think grid control should be, of course I'm a little biased, but I think grid control environment should be as reliable, as with the recovery time objective, as stringent as your most stringent recovery time objective for any monitored database. I mean, what's the point of, if your monitored database goes down and grid control isn't highly available and doesn't tell you because it's down, you've got a problem if you're relying on grid control. If you log in all the time to see if it's up, fine, who does that? So you have to, you got to install grid control highly available if you're really serious about your monitoring. So standby database, these are OMR database recommendations for DR. Standby database, DataGuard broker, and the observer, which I probably should just take that out. OMS DR recommendations, right? This is breaking it down here. Install the OMS at a standby site. this can get complicated. Look at the BNR chapter if you want, but I have a whole breakdown of how you can, different ways you can set it up. You know, the DRMS can be online with the primary, right? Active, right? Your DR site's running an OMS. It's acting as if it were anywhere. It could be sitting next to your other OMS. It's active, just as active. Just because it's at the DR site, it doesn't know that. Okay, but it's ready to also be a DR server if need be, and reconfigured to point to a standby repository if need be, and to receive agents at standby sites. Or you can have a DRMS, you know, it can be online or offline, right? Use the standby, use the server load balancer for OMS, to virtualize the OMSs. Replicate your shared receive directory. I just went over these, right? Should set up your shared file system loader. Trigger the standby OMS startup from the standby OMR startup. I told you all these things. Questions? I know we're going fast. Agent. Well, you can have Node Agent DR. That's Oracle's doc set has one page on DRs for agent and OMS. Reinstall the agent. That's what their DR is. Reinstall the agent. I give you a little more of a choice. You can pre-install a DR agent against... You can do all sorts of things with an agent. Okay, I don't even want to go into this. But there's all sorts of ways to get an agent ready to go for a standby site, okay? And you can read about it. Or you can just pre-install a DR agent against the OMS and just shut it down and be ready to go when it's the standby OMS becomes active, right? Then you would start the agent for the standby. That DR agent is going to be a chain-installed agent, right? You're talking about chain installed agents? Okay. I keep looking at my computer. Notification rules. We are into... Okay, I'm going to take a vote on some of these slides. Yay or nay, do you want to look at it? I'm going to say nay on this one.
Yeah.
Nay. If you want to know how rules work and you know how things filter down to get you an alert, this is what you need to look at to get your alerts to work. Somewhere along the line, you're going to a no and a red X and an X, and you're stopping. You're not getting to this point.
There's no way I can get a PowerPoint.
Buy the book. It's in the book. Or ask a really good question. No, I have the... I'm kidding. I'm kidding. You're going to get the PowerPoint. Yeah, you'll get it. And I have cross-references in the PowerPoint to the book in each... I went into a lot of excruciating detail to give you exact... page, section, figure, number, everything. So you don't have to be like just looking at the PowerPoint. Okay. Who runs sysadmin? Who logs into sysadmin in grid control still and everybody shares sysadmin? Anybody? Did I say sysadmin? I meant sysman. You can tell I'm an EBS guy, right? Sysman. Anybody do that? Okay. A lot of people do it, I do it, but if for public rules, you should log in as sysadmin, because if your user, you know, you get fired, you won't care, but if someone else gets fired or laid off, and they've set up rules, public rules, under their account, they're going to go away. Those rules will go away when that account is deactivated. So it's a good one to know. Sysadmin is useful for some things, okay? Use system-generated rules as templates. Who just automatically starts editing your system-generated rules? Probably everybody, right? Leave them alone. Whenever you see anything that's given to you at grid control, copy it, create like, you know, don't touch the original. Because it's good to refer to it, and it's also good to use it when everything else is failing, right? So this is just a little... general page, okay. So these are the different pages for the rules. I'm going to skip them because you told me to go faster. So there. So there. So there. Look at that. Agent configuration. All right, does anybody want to know any of these pages? This is basically just how to set up rules, okay? You can look at it, but basically rules are a way of saying, okay, I have all these metrics, and they're... Sorry. I have all these metrics, and they're firing like crazy. Am I getting any alerts? No. Why? Because the rules, notification rules, which are generic to which are excuse me, they're not shared by administrators. Excuse me, they are specific to an administrator. Okay, those rules are not allowing that alert, that metric, the threshold crossing or whatever, to filter into an alert. Okay, so rules are really important, and they're usually shared. They're public rules shared by all administrators. But you can get a rule right down to the database, to a specific metric for that database, and even, you know, to a specific method of notifying you for that specific thing. Okay, you can get email or you can get a page. So rules are very configurable. Agent configuration, EM command line interface. I'm going to skip this. Okay. Anybody use command line interface? You want to start, if you want to start programmatically using grid control instead of having to go through the console, look into EM command line interface. Easy to install. The one thing I use it for is to reset and change my preferred credentials for big sites without having to do it through the GUI for each database, you know, when they're all different passwords. That's really useful. That's the only time I really use it. And I give you the commands to do that. Set credentials, there's the commands, okay? Enable multi-inventory support. I'm going to skip over this too, okay? You know, most of you are running a central inventory, but there's a way to get your grid control to know all your inventories if they're separate, okay? You just have to configure it in an agent configuration file. This one's an important one. I'm going to mention it because it is important. Most people overlook the fact that grid control will not report on itself if it goes down for some platforms because and they still haven't fixed it. MailX is what they rely on to send the mail because it has to be done in what they call an OOB, out of bound communication, meaning not within the framework of grid control is a notification sent when grid control goes down. Why? Because grid control is down. It can't tell you to send you a notification that is down. So it has there's a MailX command in the config files in the agent that it relies on. And for some reason, you know, Oracle has decided not to write code that says, well, if I'm one of these OSs that, you know, if I'm not one of these OMSs, I can't use MailX because it's not installed by default. It doesn't, you know, I don't know why developers haven't done that, but that's there's a little trick to get, replace MailX with, you know, one of your mail commands, the command line commands that work for your site, okay? Metric tuning, that's my picture for metric tuning. like a bell for a notification rule, this is my picture. Tune, 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 you get an alert, tune. Every day I get alerts I have to tune for clients, right? Every day it's a new one. Oh, I got to tune that off. Well, where do you set them? In metric templates, generally, and then you push out your monitoring templates. You set them in a generic thing called a monitoring template, push it out, right? Does anybody not know what a monitoring template is? Good, okay. Am I going faster? Am I doing well? I need high approval. Like my mother fawned on me, so I need to say yes. You're doing really well. Okay, thank you. All right. So general recommendations for metric tuning. This is where like the bread and butter of your administration comes in for grid control. You know, you want to add metrics for additional host monitoring for your system administrators. Get them involved in grid control. Who has a system admin that uses grid control? Not a DBA, but a sysadmin, like an OS. They do? All right. Really?
Yeah.
You have a great relationship then with, because, you know, that's one of those, right? They don't talk to each other, DBAs and sysadmins, a lot of times. So we'll go over briefly over the additional host monitoring. There's a lot of it you can give them. Remove frequently firing metrics. Choose all metrics for OMS and repository target type. Is that default? True. All metrics are chosen out of the box to fire for the OMS target type. And this is a logical target, OMS and repository target. It's a logical target that basically says, if my OMS goes down, meaning all of them if you have multiple, if it goes down, I want to know about it. Or if my repository goes down, whether it's, and that means all the rack nodes, I want to know about it. Okay, that's a logical target. And all the metrics are enabled. I just answered my own question. If you had asked that question, I would have given you the book right off the bat because that's a good question. All right. They're all enabled, and you're going to get all sorts of alerts. You're going to have to turn some off probably. There's a couple that are bugs. They have a greater than sign when it should be a less than sign. You can't change that. Got to turn off the alert. I give you some of them here. adjust the thresholds for targets, add flash recovery errors to the generic alert log error. That's an important one. You won't get flash recovery errors. Maybe in the latest version you might, but if your flash recovery area fills up, your database is down, right? Grid Control, for some reason, at least earlier versions, did not report FRA errors. So I give you the actual, you know, Aura dash, you know, errors to add to your generic alert log metric. So it will report flash recovery errors, okay? Yeah, it searches. Yeah. Well, there's a lot of ways, but may as well use Grid Control, right? Just add it to your threshold for generic alert log. You could use another alert log. There's another alert log.
I thought it would maybe check the available free space in that FRA.
Oh, well, there's
Grid Control. You see free FRA space, but maybe
there are metrics, but they don't. They're in the documentation set, but they don't actually exist in Grid Control yet. They've documented stuff that they want to put in, but it's not there yet. But it says it's there, but you go and look there, it's not there. Okay, so
these metrics are the ones which are inside the database. Nothing like accepted.
They're in the agent. The agent has intelligence as to metrics that it's monitoring, right? It's got all sorts of things it monitors for, table space full, you know, host up down, you know, all the status ones, right? One of the metrics is for alert log errors. I'm saying add the alert log errors for. There's a generic alert log error metric, and it only alerts for certain Aura errors. I'm saying add additional ones for flash recovery errors.
I thought you dequeued from the other queue instead of going in and finding it. I don't know. Like generally, what happens is that, like, I'm not using Grid Control, but I'm dequeuing the, you know, messages.
When you say you're dequeuing, what do you mean?
You have alert queue, right?
Okay.
So
you get alerts.
Right.
You're talking technical about something. I'm not quite sure what you mean, because you're talking about advanced queuing. That's something different.
Right.
You're not talking about advanced queuing.
No. How does it do? Like, does it? Okay. Inside the database, you have metrics.
Okay.
Right?
That's database control. No. The metrics don't exist for Grid Control in the database, of target database.
Not using those.
No. Well, it uses... Okay. It uses the... For performance metrics, for example, it uses AWR kinds of things.
Right.
But basically, fetch, let's go out and take that information from the database. It's true, it does. There's database, the instrumentation the database has. Those things are being pulled, but they're not resonant. The metrics themselves are taken from AWR reports and such, but they're pulled into an agent, fetchlet, that actually has that intelligence to say, you know, I have a warning alert and a critical alert I can set for whatever the metric is.
Right. But then there are some others which are not there that you are...
Those are called...
User-defined.
No, well, that... Yeah, okay, if that's what you're talking about. Yeah, you can define additional metrics, too. But, yeah, I thought you were talking about something else. I won't even go into it.
The alert log is external or internal?
No, the alert log is a database alert log.
No,
it's external.
It's external.
It's external. Yeah. It parses the alert log of the database. It doesn't have its... You know, but it does keep the metadata for the alert log errors in the repository. Okay. Set up the disk space metrics under the host rather than the database target. Like, I always get rid of my archive area full and all that stuff. I monitor anything related to disk space on my host target, right? I don't need to get multiple alerts, you know, when your disk fills up and it happens to be your archive log area. I don't want to get one from the database and from the host. I just do it all from the host, right? It's a database. I mean, it's space. So space is host to me. Okay. You have to add network and rack interconnect metrics, user-defined metrics. I give you a whole bunch of user-defined metrics in the book to add, which you'll probably never do. But there are a bunch that you can add to alert you of interconnect metric errors and stuff. Create the prod and non-prod admins with different metrics. In other words, if you have a production administrator and a non-production administrator, you don't want to get non-production alerts for every little thing. So you create two different admins, and they have different metric rules that they subscribe to. Okay? I'm slowing down too much here.
So in Grid Control, can we assign different hosts or different databases to different Like, for example, I have a team of 5 people. Or the worst way, I want them to access only 10. And reserve only 5. Can we do that?
Yes. Yeah, I've been in sites like Advisor where, you know, they've got teams of DBAs and they each get the pager one night and they transfer, you know, pass it to the other team, and they've got rules down to the, you know, each rule is for a particular database. I mean, you can get very microscopic, or what's the word, precise about assigning rules to DBAs. So it's certain databases they have responsibility for, they only get alerts for those.
You can log in through your
control. Or they can give you grant you responsibilities to see things real time. Yeah, that too. Or they give you, you know, granting roles and to admins.
5 minutes.
5 minutes? Oh, man. All right. Here's the default metrics you can change. I threw some in there just to show you. There's a bunch. There's a table in the book on that. Jobs and user-defined metrics. We're actually not so bad here. I'm further along than I thought I'd be. I give you some example jobs and metrics to add. And here's I'll give this to you to put on the website. This is a user-defined metric for blocking locks, which I find very useful and took a while to develop. I'm just going to give it to you, okay? Blocking locks. What happens? You get a blocking lock, you just get the alert, right? But it doesn't tell you what's happening in the database at the time. This will give you all the information about who the blockers are, who the waiters are, that kind of thing. So you can set up a UDM or user-defined metric for blocking locks, and they'll give you the code and sample output, et cetera, here, okay? A lot of applications have problems with that. Resume slideshow. 5 minutes. All right. Now I got to pick my battles. So, given examples, blocking locks, how to set them up, how to figure out what tables you need to build in grid control. You can put a user-defined metric for that. It'll automatically tell you every month it'll run, and it'll tell you which tables you got to rebuild. It's a metric. So, grid control monitors itself and reports on itself when you want to extend it. Tell you how to do that. BNR recommendations. That's the last part of this talk. So, if you want to know how to back up grid control and recover it. I get that's really where you get the most money. The book gives you stuff that the documentation set just did not have on backup and recovery of grid control. I go into a lot of detail. I find it useful to be able to recover my grid control site when something goes wrong. It used to be much worse than it is now. A lot of times, things that get out of sync, you have no choice but to restore your environment from a backup. These days, it's not so bad, but you still need to back it up, right? So I give you some. I go through the features of grid control backups to tell you what to back up, when. These are the database, right? Other grid control components affected by it, and the grid control servers themselves. I give you specifics on how to set up the database and recovery catalog, how to go through and use the OMR. Use the backup. Grid control backup interface to backup the OMR repository itself. Do you want to use the interface to recover the repository? No, it'll be down, so you know you can't really use it. But you can certainly take advantage of all the recovery settings even to get ready to do that within grid control. You know, while things are up, you can set up all your recovery settings too. Then go in the old-fashioned mode and, you know, use RMAN to recover directly. But I'm not, you know, sometimes you can even use flashback database to recover grid control. But so I go through all that, all the screens, how to set them up, okay? Oh, I'm so glad I can go through this. These are advantages and disadvantages of the three backup methods of grid control for databases. Oracle suggested, customized, and RMAN script job. Okay, I give you advantages and disadvantages of each, how to set them up, different variations of those things, okay? I told you I was going to blow through some of these, and this is what I was going to blow through anyway. So, all the screens to set up those three different techniques. I would suggest using an RMAN script job or a customized backup strategy. That's just, if you want to use Oracle suggested backup right out of the box, it'll start backing stuff up for you, but not real robust. Okay, here's the recovery settings you can set, right? You can set stuff at the database. You can do this with database commands, but you can also use the GUI, right, to set up your MTTR and stuff like that. Okay? Here's the complete recovery procedure for grid control. And then there's an incomplete recovery, right? Complete database recovery and incomplete. If it's complete, it's simple, right? Boom, boom, boom. Stop everything. Restore, recover, open. Everything's perfect, right? You're recovering to this current time. Incomplete recovery, not so easy. But not so bad either. You can do it with flashback database, database point time recovery, which involves media, or both. You know, flashback to the point where it's still good, then use archive logs and flash and roll forward till you got, you know, to your latest archive log. Okay? I'll tell you how to do that. Resetting agents. I'm going to take 1 minute on this, okay, and we're almost done. Really, this is near the end of the slides. What is a reset? Does anybody use clear state? Agent clear state command? Okay, don't use it. Okay? Just telling you right now, don't use it. I've been through the internals of it with Oracle. Do not use the clear state command unless you're pointing an agent to another OMS or repository. Use something very similar procedure called I call it resetting agents. Okay? That's whenever you're doing an incomplete recovery of the OMS agent or database. Okay? I got to leave someone room for a question, for a good question before I end. Okay, think of a good question because I got to vote on this. But anyway, if incomplete recovery of any kind, you got to reset your agent. So what does that mean? That means the OMS has got information about some agents, you know, that have uploaded to it. Agents got some information about the OMS, and the repository has information about both. At some point, when the thing breaks, they're going to be out of sync. You need to, and how do you reset that so that everything's in sync? Right, so the OMS knows about all the agent files and vice versa. And this is the procedure to use. It's a very simple procedure. I'll just give it to you right up front. Stop the agent. Remove some files in the agent EMD directory. Start the agent. Upload. Done. Okay, I give that. How do you restore the OMS? Very simple procedure. Basically, restore from backup. And then reset. Reset is part of the command there at the end. And then how to restore the agent. You got to reset it at the end, too. Okay? There's a summary of everything we did. Okay? One page gives you everything we did or skipped over.